Cappers, what's up? How we doing? It is a Monday. It is the day after what was maybe the craziest day in some memory of the football world. It was a wild, wild day of football, and we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about Marquette. We'll do Marquette first. Because, we're going to keep it local, and then we're going to chat a lot about the conference championship games, probably end out with looking at what is a smaller slate for the Bucks this week, which is always a good thing. Want to shout out everybody who's been listening lately. It was cool to talk to my boy Mach, who I went to the Marquette game with, and saying he was a recent subscriber and just really how much he enjoys listening to the podcast, talking to Brian on Saturday about how he became a subscriber and then walking him through all the trials and tribulations of SnowTap. It's always fun. Colin, who shouted us out on Friday, I believe. So that all of that's great. Really appreciate all the love. Like I said, tell your friends, tell your family. We are the alternative source for sports. It's the one you should be listening to. We get you a podcast out 20 to 25 minutes each day, and then sometimes a little longer. So it makes that ride into work a little bit easier. All right, let's waste no more time. So the Marquette Golden Eagles won again. They win their fifth straight game. They beat Providence 79-68. At first, it did not look very good for Marquette. They were very sloppy in the first half. They got off to a rough start. They were down 6 at halftime. They had only scored 29 points. It was probably one of their worst halves of the year, rating up there with Presbyterian's first half when they were awful in that game. Also, too, the second half against Kansas. And so there were some issues. I mean, no question about it. Marquette did not look prepared. They looked a little tired. Maybe they were a little too jacked up about all the Dwayne Wade festivities. Dwayne Wade there at the Fiserv Forum for Dwayne Wade Day. But then Marquette sort of picked it back up. They figured it all out in the second half, basically led by the brothers Hauser, mostly Sam. Sam Hauser has developed a confidence in him that we haven't really seen. I mean, Anonymous Eagle pointed out great. Obviously, if you're a Marquette fan, you're following Anonymous Eagle, but pointed out that, you know, maybe the best thing that happened to Marquette this season was Marcus Howard getting hurt for a game, because Sam Hauser has become really confident. All of a sudden, Sam Hauser is not just a guy who's a pick and pop 3-point shooter in the corner. He's taking it off the dribble. He is going into the lane, initiating contact. He is a great finisher. He does a really good job finishing at the rim, drawing contact, not being afraid. And his brother Joey, who was in a little bit of foul trouble, did just as well. And so the Hausers basically closed out this game. Marcus Howard had another good Marcus Howard day. I believe he had 22 points and 9 rebounds. So Howard had a nice day, but the Hausers were the story. And trust me, this Marquette team is really good. And now you have to ask the question. You have to ask it. What is the ceiling for this Marquette team? Is it a Final Four run? Is it just get to the Sweet 16? I think getting to the Sweet 16 should be the goal, because you look at this, Steve Wojciechowski does not have a NCAA tournament win under his belt. It would be good for the program to get at least the second weekend, but they have what it takes to be a Final Four team. Like, you obviously, to get to the Final Four is really unpredictable. You need some breaks, you need a good draw, you need a lot of things to go your way. So right now, though, they have the look of a Final Four team. They're efficient on defense. Their offense is starting to kind of cook. Like, that second half, as bad as the first half was, the second half was really, really good. And I don't know what kind of team stops Marquette. And part of it is they have size inside. They kind of dealt with foul trouble with Theo John and Ed Morrow all day, yet it really wasn't that big of a deal. And the fact that Joey Hauser and Sam show some physicality inside is great. And the fact that they don't need to make all their buckets from behind the arc. They're good three-point shooters, don't get me wrong. But a lot of their offense in the second half was based off of the dribble drive of Hauser and Sakar Anum. They really do they're a very versatile team. And so this is where I get into, I don't know what's a bad matchup for Marquette. I look at the teams that are across the board, and I just wonder what really is a bad matchup. Now, when is the national media going to kind of start seeing more respect for them? I'm not ready to play that card yet. I'm going to at least give it to like February. But you have to start looking at this like, they beat a Louisville team who's way better than expected. Louisville could be ranked this week. I mean, they're damn good. They polished off Georgia Tech this week after beating Carolina. They did okay against Boston College. No letdown there. They're 5-1 in a tough-as-nails ACC. Kansas State's starting to figure it out. Kansas State's probably going to be ranked this week. That win is looking better and better. Buffalo continues to ship. Marquette is their only loss of the year. So how is Marquette not at least a 4 seed, if not hovering into that 3 seed range? But it's early. I can't get myself too worked up. I'm trying really hard. But I think if you're putting Marquette lower than a 5, if you're putting Marquette at 5 or lower, you just have not watched this team enough. And you are going too much off the net rating, KenPom, and others. Where Marquette, the computers haven't really loved Marquette this year. Paint Touches wrote an extensive piece on this. Go read that from those guys. But if you watch it, they definitely pass the eye test. I realize that's a very Wally Walkershaw thing, but they do. They don't just win in the way of they outscore teams, which is what they did so many times the last few years. They out-hustle. They outwork teams. They are gritty as fuck. This is the grittiest Marquette team I probably since that 2013 Buzz Williams Big East champion team. They are so gritty. They just get down into the mud. They're not afraid of sort of the big moment either. It doesn't faze them. They're ice, and it seems like there is a next man up mentality. And I love this team. Like, I can't get enough of them. I have the fever. And so, yes, I would love to hear those who are maybe Marquette fans, maybe not Marquette fans. What do you really think this ceiling is for this team? Could they be a Final Four team? I think it's a worthy conversation to be having halfway through the season. Also, too, before I get into the NFL, I want to shout out the Fiserv Forum, not for what they did, but what they didn't do. So if you guys were familiar, I went to the game yesterday. Shout out to my boy Pat Luce and my boy Mike Weber, and hooked us up with tickets again, which was great. They had $3 beers, $3 screwdrivers, $3 Bloody Marys, $3 breakfast sandwiches, all in honor of Dwayne Wade. Really cool promotion. But what they didn't understand is that everybody likes to fucking drink beer. Everybody likes getting drunk before games. Like that, that's good. And it was a sellout crowd. So what the Fiserv Forum did not plan for was that everybody was going to want to get a free beer. Well, not a free beer, but $3 beer compared to your $10 prices. That's a really great deal, especially with a lot of students who are back in. They're above, a lot of them are above age. If they're not above age, they have a fake ID. They're trying to get that through. But what slowed it down and what I think they need to look forward to in the next is they needed to A, have signs everywhere to say, this is where you get beers. This is where you get Bloody Marys. They should have had a beer and a cocktail line because they could have just in and out, in and out. But also too, the beers were on tap. That's another mistake because that slows the process down. If you had 12-ounce cans, if you just got a bunch of 12-ounce cans, then that would speed it up. I realize there is a recycling aspect of that you have to consider, but you're also going to leave those cups everywhere too. So what's the difference? I know aluminum's expensive, but I have to wonder on that regard as well. And it was just so mismanaged. Mach and I stand in line for 40 fucking minutes. We get up to the front. They're like, no more sales. It's about to tip off. By the way, the game hadn't tipped off. They were just doing player introductions. So the game had not started yet. So again, that's false advertising. I didn't even fuck with the sandwiches or anything like that. All we just wanted were to get two small beers for each other, so we both had two little ones and be great. And instead, we dealt with this Mickey Mouse bullshit from Fiserv Forum, and it's just irrehensible in a way. And I hate to sound like I'm privileged, and I'm not. It's just, I feel like when you put on a promotion and you hype it up, like Mark, and I just feel bad for Marquette Athletics. I think that the Fiserv did them dirty, and it's not their fault. It's the Fiserv being completely unprepared for this and not working through all of the logistics and just mailing it in. And I get it. Look, they had the Monster Jam last night. They were some of them probably worked open or clopen, as they call it, to close open. They probably opened it. They closed it last night. I get it. I totally understand that. But at the same time, this is your fucking job. You have to, that comes with the territory. So pick it the fuck up. That was just bad, man. It was really terrible, really disappointing. So my recommendation to the university, if they were to do this again, make sure you have it all figured out with the Fiserv Forum, and don't just kind of half-ass it, because that's what it felt like it did. It just felt like get everybody in the arena early, get everybody to the stadium, yet we had no plan, no guidance or direction. They should have at least, and I think they did test this out at different points of the year, but they should have at least done a trial run on the weekends before implementing this on a Sunday at 11 a.m. All right, I've said my piece. Moving on to the conference championships. So these were bananas. Two of the better games that I think you'll ever see, especially Chiefs-Patriots. Chiefs-Patriots was something that I don't know if I can remember a game that was that good that I was so invested in where the Packers were not playing. I mean, that was phenomenal. It was a 17-7 game in the fourth quarter, and there was just so many big plays back and forth, and there were so many things that could have decided that game. And the offsides on D Ford is going to be remembered for a long time in Kansas City. It is a painful reminder that this game could have been in Kansas City's hands and over by that. And yet there was an offsides, and he was offsides. There was no disputing that. I know people were mad about the NFL refs, and we'll get to those guys when we talk Rams Saints. But the other thing too, maybe this adds to the aura of it. The AFC championship games have been kind of trash. If you look throughout the years, they are not that good. Yeah, the ones that I found where I'm like, okay, that was like a memorable game, were the Patriots-Ravens in 2011 is like one of the more forgotten amazing games, because like this one, it had so many twists and turns. Billy Cundiff missed a 32-yard field goal. I forgot about that, but he missed a 32-yard field goal. He probably would have went on the Today Show if that were to happen in 2019. The Colts-Patriots 17-point comeback was ridiculous. The other one that, and maybe it's because it all involves Patriots that you just forget about them, but that 17-point comeback by Peyton Manning, to me, is like the crowning Peyton Manning game. If you're like, what's that one game for Peyton Manning? It's that one, because it was incredible. Pats Broncos, the missed 2-point conversion by Brady was memorable, but that game was kind of a slugfest. It wasn't really that appealing aesthetically. Obviously the Browns, and then you're like, you go back in the annals, right? Browns, Broncos, classics, the drive, the fumble. And like, I think the reason those games are so memorable, they were great games and they were before my time, but it's the Browns were never the same, right? Part of that mystique of those games has been just the Browns have never got back to that spot, and that there will always be the what if and how that might have changed the course of history for the Cleveland Browns. So, but going back to Chiefs Patriots, it was a masterclass by Tom Brady. I thought Tom Brady was as surgical as he could have been. He found the open guys every third down. He made all the right moves. He found Gronk. He found Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, Philip Dorsett. I mean, Brady was a machine today, and he carved apart the Chiefs defense, and they really didn't have an answer. They really didn't have an answer for Brady. They could not get a pass rush. The Patriots offensive line was stellar. And I know there are going to be Packer fans who are like, well, why didn't we hire Josh McDaniels? Because Josh McDaniels put Bob Sutton in a body bag. He was that good. And so there will be a lot of that. And I think some of that is fair, but I think a lot of that is just you can't predict that stuff, right? There is much more to being a head coach than just calling plays. Let's just put it that way. And so, yes, Andy Reid, I know that Andy Reid gets shit on a lot for being just not in the big moments and everything like that, but like Andy Reid did a really good job. They adjusted. They did everything they could. The coin toss thing sucks. I get it. I know that people are like, oh, let's change this rule. Let's get this happening. Like, you do realize that like the same people are advocating for more player safety. So if we continue on with the game and these players continue to play after their bodies are beaten the fuck down, I mean, how is that helping player safety? I think the rule kind of sucks, but at the same time, like, yeah, it just leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth. Let's just put it at that. I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer. And if Mahomes gets the ball back to try to get a touchdown to tie, and then he makes the 2-point conversion, then is it more that you defer in overtime? I mean, the whole strategy changes, right? Because you could go for two and essentially win the game or just keep playing, and then it becomes sudden death and next person scores, which I don't necessarily hate. I think that there is a little bit of a merit to it. You just have to do the player safety thing, especially, and maybe it's a playoff only thing. Maybe it's kind of like hockey. Hockey bends their overtime rules when it comes to the playoffs, and maybe football needs to look at something like that. So Saints Rams was a good game. I don't know. I mean, it's a great game because there's that memorable moment, right? There's the memorable moment that you'll always have, and you'll always have that one with the Tommy Lee Lewis play. Really interesting now that Mike Florio did some digging and Commissioner Goodell could overturn the game. Like, he could restart the game. He could start the game from that very time. It would never happen, but it's still a thing. And Florio speculates that's part of the reason why we haven't seen a statement out. I'm taping this late on Sunday morning into Monday morning. So that's probably why the NFL hasn't come out with anything. I was really impressed with Jared Goff. I think Jared Goff, it really showed himself today. I think if you're like, who kind of won the weekend from a quarterback perspective in this order, it is Tom Brady, Jared Goff, Patrick Mahomes, who's not that far behind Goff, and Drew Brees, who's last. If anyone who may retire this year, it might be Drew Brees. Drew Brees is starting to lose it. That arm just kind of petered out. Like, it was very Favre-like, where he just kind of didn't have it at the end of the year. And that's such an older guy thing. So I almost wonder if we get a surprise kind of retirement from Drew Brees. It would not shock me in the slightest. I could also, and the Saints obviously don't have a first-round pick, but you never know. They could work their way back in the first round, draft a guy like Kyler Murray, and get him into the mix, and all of a sudden Kyler Murray is sort of the backup for Drew Brees, at least for a year, and then maybe Brees steps down. I don't know. I think Brees is kind of washed, and the Saints had multiple opportunities to step on the throats of the Rams, and they didn't. And I get being mad about a penalty, but Sean Payton also overthought himself and didn't just run the football. All Sean Payton had to do was run that fucking ball and run time off that clock. Yet he decided to keep passing with his old quarterback. And if he just runs the football, this game, it's completely different. The Saints probably win. So I understand that the referee part is, it hurts, and that's what you go to first, but it's not the reason the Saints lost that game. Saints lost that game because they didn't run the ball. The Saints lost that game because they didn't step on the throat of the Rams when they had a chance. They could have easily made that a win for New Orleans, and they didn't. So the Saints lose their first game at the Dome under Peyton and Breeze, which is wild that they've never lost a game at the Dome until then. The Saints are obviously built for next year. They can definitely be back in this spot yet again. They've had some painful losses. They've kind of become the new Packers in a way, is that they just have the worst ways to lose football games. Minnesota Miracle, I guess this will be called the non-call. I don't know what this will be in the annals, but yeah, the Saints have obviously missed out on some golden opportunities. Definitely not in the top five. It's in the top five of, like, I won't even put it in the top five, actually, of NFC games. NFC games have actually been much more competitive. Number one for me in that is Vikings-Falcons. Vikings-Falcons to me might be the best because that was so unexpected. That was so unpredictable. It was one of the more amazing kind of moments of that happened. Vikings-Saints was also equally incredible with the Brett Favre thing and all that went into it. And how that all shook out. That was also an amazing game. Packers Seahawks, you got to wear it, but that was also just memorable in its own way for Packer fans and for football fans. Giants Niners get slept on. This is probably the best weekend since 2011. So that was the weekend where Giants Niners went to overtime. That was the whole Kyle Williams fumble, if you remember that. And then before that was the Patriots-Ravens game with the Lee Evans drop, the Billy Cundiff miss, and that was that one. I think that Lee Evans dropped that one. I believe that's the same game. I looked it up, and I can't remember that. I'm blanking on that. But this has probably been the best championship weekend since 2011. Both games delivered. The ratings are going to be just massive. And it should be a good Super Bowl. I'm excited for Rams Patriots. We'll obviously talk way more about that in the weeks to come before the big game, as you know. All right, real quick about the Bucks because I am running over. Bucks play the Mavs this afternoon. Should be awesome to watch Giannis versus Luka. Then they get 3 days off. So the Bucks haven't had this much time off in a long time. They get Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday off before welcoming the Hornets to the Fiserv Forum. The Bucks play two teams this week who are awful on the road. The Mavs and Hornets have both been mediocre at best. They have single digits in road wins this season. So the Bucks need to just take care of business, keep that winning streak rolling. It's at four right now. Then they have a big Sunday night ESPN matchup with the Thunder. Last time the Bucks were there was the infamous Giannis tip-in play. Or was that 2 years ago? No, because I can't remember. I don't think Paul George was not on that team. He must have been hurt because that did happen last year. So that was the infamous Giannis tip-in game where he was clearly out of bounds and he still tipped it in for the win. So there's a lot of memories there. I wouldn't say there's bad blood between those two teams, although Russell Westbrook always seems to be just terrible against the Bucks. I don't know why. But that's a big one. And then the Raptors loom next Thursday, which we'll obviously talk about as the weeks go on. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Daily Tap. We'll probably bring it a little more local, but yeah, we just had to talk about the championship games. It's just absolutely wild. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. See ya. Bye.